Test Talks, Episode 15. Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a mostly weekly podcast dedicated to all things test automation. I'm Joe from joecolantonio.com, and in this episode, we're going to be speaking with Lance Kind about how to agile your test plans. There are a bunch of firsts in this episode, and also make sure to listen for Lance's big BDD announcement. Check it out. Hey, Lance, welcome back to Test Talks.
Oh, thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me back. So a bit of time has passed since we've last talked. Was it about 6 months?
Yep. Yeah, you're the first person to appear on Test Talks twice in a row. And I just wanted to catch up with you. So before we get started, could you just tell us what you've been up to?
Let's see. Most recently, I've been pushing out or publishing versions of Scrub Noir, as you've kindly reviewed an issue, which is a software project management comic that teaches you how to make your Scrum team better. Recently, I got Scrum Noir Mad Dog Mary to the number one selling list for software project management books just last week. I don't know if it'll stay there, but we made it last week, which was a nice milestone to hit. The other thing, this is an exclusive breaking news for Test Talk. I finally got done that website that I was talking about for teaching people how to write good BDD. It's at the URL agilenoir.biz. It's called MI Behavioral. It teaches you using the model of am I hot or not to teach you how to judge what's behavioral and what's not.
Wow, that sounds awesome. I'm going to definitely check it out after the call. It's something I struggle with every day because I'm a BDD lead for 7 Scrum teams, and I look at BDDs all the time, and for some reason, it's always a fight, you know, keep the implementation details out of the BDDs.
Oh, right on, right on. So those listeners, please share the URL to your teams who are doing BDD. What I didn't finish last night was the ability to upload your own BDDs. I think it will be quite short to add that. So hopefully by the time people are listening to this, they can actually upload their own BDDs if they choose to share with the world and add to the am I behavioral or not BDD. What would I call these? Oh, scenarios. That's right.
Very cool. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm definitely going to promote the heck out of this because I think it's something that's really needed.
Yeah. In fact, one strategy that I would like to start using is when you visit the internet and you look at BDD scenarios, sometimes you see some bad ones. I'm going to suggest that people, when they upload them, to upload them, to take the snapshot. So it's all working with images. Take the snapshot. So it has the URL in there as well. That way, whoever put the information on there to start with, maybe it'll get back to them and they'll improve their own BDDs on their website. But I think that would be a nice emergent behavior. I know if I'm doing something poorly and if somebody gives me feedback, you know, I may ignore them or I may not. And I could actually improve or correct my information that I'm telling everybody else how to do something. So, yeah.
I'm going to be all over that site after this. So thanks. All right, Lance. So I recently read one of your latest posts, Don't Forget to Agile Your Test Plan When Moving from Waterfall to Scrum. And it's packed with a bunch of nuggets. So in this episode, I'd really like to unpack some of these ideas to help us better understand some of the excellent points that you made in that article. In a nutshell, what do you mean by how to agile your test plan?
Teams that were doing waterfall never had actual working software to test on a frequent basis. And so they were faced with creating a plan that they would execute in months in the future, maybe even a year, over a year, about how they would test something that they can't actually see or look at. When they're writing the plan, they can't see or look at. So they would write very detailed plans. An agile test plan takes into account one of the manifesto values, working software is a primary measure of progress. From there, the agile processes give us the ability or encourage us, in order for us to be agile, to have some working software every iteration. And that software is what we're concerned with for testing. So in the agile context, we're just testing what we can actually work with in the very short period, where in the waterfall context, where we're trying to plan things out months in advance, and we're guessing at something that we didn't have actually built.
at a bare minimum, what do you think every agile test plan should have or not have?
Should have some happy path elements and negative path elements. In something that we're going to do this sprint, we should know the software should work under when it's happy. and then a few failure cases of when we know either the user's input something wrong, or the system's unhappy with what the user input, or the system's unhealthy.
In an agile project, how would someone normally keep track of a test plan? Like you said, you don't want them producing a bunch of documentation. So have you seen best practices for saving this test plan or making it so it's not something that is not ever updated again?
So the type of test plan we do with Agile now is to plan out what we're going to do in the next 2 weeks or the next 4 weeks if your sprints are 4 weeks. And this test plan is something that we'll start actually implementing within a few days. So because of that, we can just stick them onto the user stories. So the user stories that the development team works on during sprint planning, we write down the acceptance criteria, number of bullet points, generally 4 to 6 bullet points. And you could have more or less, but that's just the guideline. Each user story, which is the requirements that the team's going to work on over the next sprint, will have a set of these.
I'm just curious to get your feedback or your input on what we're doing in my project. Basically, we have a feature file, and a feature file or feature files can map to what we call a requirement. Basically, any feature file, any code for that implement BDD goes into a code review. And in our code review, we have something called a testing template. In that testing template, a tester can outline all the different ways that they're challenging and verifying the test within their for this particular sprint, for this story. So would you consider that an agile test plan, or you think that's over? Is that too much?
Let's start with the feature file. Is the feature file, it kind of sounds like we're talking about the BDD implementation feature file. Is that right? Or is this just is this a word that's similar?
No, it's a BDD feature file.
Okay. And is that BDD feature file, the unfinished work in that feature file, is that work that we're going to implement the next sprint, or is that work for the whole release?
Work within that sprint only.
Okay, good. So far, so good. And then the testing template. The testing template. How many pages? If you were to print out the testing template, how many pages would it be?
That's a good question. I'd say at least 2 to 3. Can we talk about why that may not be a good idea to have too much detail into it in a test plan if it's more than one page?
So if you have a 3-page testing template, well, that's great. At least it's not 10 or 20. It does seem a little heavyweight for something if your sprints are 2 weeks. If your sprints are 1 month, that's kind of it's more than one page still, but that's not bad. Okay, so other types of testing templates. When teams are used to doing waterfall, as I described earlier, when teams are used to doing waterfall, they struggle and they really feel that, you know what, we're not doing our work if we're not doing a lot of heavy analysis. That's how we feel our work is high quality. We spend a long time doing it. And so some of these teams have this feeling that we got to feel like we sweated really hard to get this information. The hard part is, as a coach, is you're trying to teach people how to change their behaviors, and you're going to pull them outside of their comfort zone. And at the same time, you're going to have resistance from people to change if something feels wrong in their gut. And in this case, you're talking about a direct 180-degree change of going from heavy analysis to many pages to a little analysis to maybe one page, or maybe no pages, but on the back of a sticky note. Let's add another litmus test here. Back to your case. In your case, is the test plan now finished once the sprint starts, or do they have to continue adding more to that paper?
So basically, it gets reviewed by us within the code review. And if we have questions, it goes back and forth until it's completed to what we think it should be filled out.
Okay. So that happens during the sprint, the back and
yep.
forth part.
And when it's closed, it's usually closed right near the end of the sprint.
So if I were to implement some of the tests, is there anything stopping me from starting to implement some of the tests on the first day of the sprint?
Nope.
Okay. So that's good. There's no constraints. Like, I don't have to wait for a checkpoint of the code review to finish before I can start work. All right. So that's flexibility. Development team, by the way, they're going to be giving feedback with each other on a daily basis anyhow. And so anything on any of their unfinished stories, they may finish a story, and if it's not accepted by the product owner, they may finish a story on the day one, and they may still change that code on the last day of the sprint. So I don't think there's any issues with that. Just so we expect the same thing to happen with test automation, is even though I finished all the test automation for the first story that we finished in the sprint, and I did that maybe a few weeks ago, finished it. but there was some code review or changes, or I was looking at it just the other day and I saw, wow, you know what? I can make this a little better. One of the Agile Manifesto principles is continuous improvement to technical excellence, which means, hey, I should feel free when I see a problem to improve it. That's all that simply means. If it's the last day of the sprint and my idea is going to improve is going to take many more weeks, well then, okay, maybe I need to just take a small step and then tell the team, by the way, I saw this big problem, but I took a small step. Or maybe I talk to the team and say, hey, is this a problem? This is my understanding. Do you guys agree? Because I'd like to take a small step, but I can see it's a commitment to actually finishing this journey. It'll take a few more sprints. The other litmus test is, can you actually start writing tests on the first day of the sprint? And your answer is yes. So that's good. So I talked about the behaviors of people are hard to change. It takes a while to change them. Number two, we talked about how the physical page size, it's a measure of how much you've adapted to Agile versus Waterfall. And then number three, the fact if you can start executing right away.
Yeah, what is the Google 10-minute test plan?
A fellow at Google, and he had this problem that other people do who are test managers, who say, wow, I want my team to start doing Agile. And they're demanding lots of time, lots of documentation before they can get started. He thought, you know what? These guys have a lot of product knowledge. They're just not feeling the courage to write it down into acceptance criteria, or they're not feeling the courage to write quick test plans. And so he said, you know what? I'm just going to ask him to do it in 10 minutes. And so he would get his group together, his group of testers. He's a test manager. And he'd say, hey, guys, I think, you know, we're not really tapping our creativity. We can write a lot of these test plans without all this support from the architects or from usability, blah, blah, blah. And he says, let's just do it at a couple exercises. And he says, okay, write down all the things that you would need to test for this feature, and he would tell them the feature, and then he would say go, and he would he'd have a timer, and then they would start working on writing down all of the test scenarios that they would work on. They would complain, like, they're in this mental state where they already are sure that this is the wrong path because they're not applying the same behaviors of heavy duty analysis, of getting all the information that's possible to squeeze from the organization before they start even writing the test plan. He's breaking that habit, and he successfully was able to do so. Now he actually did about two or three iterations of 10-minute test plans. So he'd do 10 minutes. They would look at the results, retrospect on the results, and then he would give them 10 minutes more. So even though it's called the 10-minute test plan, he spends about 20, 30 minutes in this exercise mode. The main thing is they're spending a short period of time working on a focused problem as a group. He discovered that they could get 80% of the test plan finished in 10 minutes, and that's a lot of value.
Awesome. Yeah, you laid out a few different approaches of how people can address the creating a test plan in Agile quicker and better. And so the 10-minute test plan was one of them. You also talked about the 4D analysis approach.
One of my fellow coaches that I was working with recently, his name is Xu Yi. He's from China. And he worked a lot in telecom. He saw something called 3D analysis from Craig Larman, one of the big, he publishes a lot of very good Scrum books, Craig Larman. And apparently, not in one of his Scrum books, but apparently somewhere, Xu Yi found this thing called 2 or 3D analysis. And Craig, by the way, has a lot of history in telecom as well. And so what he saw in Craig's work, he said, wow, this gives me a lot of the analysis that I like to do. Because by the way, Xu Yi comes from the test side of the organization. And he's an Agile coach who came from a big background of test. He liked what he saw, but he added another dimension. So Xu Yi has these four dimensions, and the four dimensions are acceptance criteria. And then he adds some more items in. He adds in assumptions. Yeah, what are our assumptions about what we're doing? And then he adds in process. Now, the process is the most complicated part because there's multiple ways to look at the process. We're not talking about software operating system processes. We're talking about business processes. Maybe you need to document the business process that what's going to happen when I type into a Google search box? What's the business process in the background? How do the AdWords pop up when I type in Monica Lewinsky? The Google AdWords business processes are going to analyze those words and decide what AdWords to show in the AdWords column on the side, in addition to Google search. Another type of process you have to make some decisions on which process is most suitable for your feature. So the other process is a technical process, like what systems in the back end are going to be used to make this feature work. So for example, back to the Google search window, when you type in a Google search, you hit search, there's a whole cloud of services that are employed. you can list those services. You know, one of them we mentioned was the AdWords. Number two, the thing that actually looks up your search criteria. There's probably multiples of those. And I really don't know. I don't work for Google. So those are bunch of services that are employed in order for that search term to pop up with some results. And then the other type of process would be like a workflow. You could document the you know, now we're getting to a type of 4D process, which isn't behavioral. You could document the workflow of the UI, or you could document if you have a lot of interaction. Say maybe you're developing a router or a phone, and you want to. And this feature is about the interactions between multiple network entities. And you could say, okay, network entity one passes this message to network entity two, and network entity two replies with a response. And then now the originating network entity now communicates with another entity, et cetera, et cetera. So you could document all those things in the process area. Generally, for your feature, you'll probably have one of those, which is most useful. I have seen where they use more than one, but you know, I wouldn't expect people to try to do all three things. Otherwise, you're gonna have multiple pages, or maybe you can fit it all on one page. Okay, the last D, scope. So scope is, the scope, I think, is sometimes there's negotiation with the product owner in the meeting where the user story is documented as a user, I want to be able to do a Google search, blah, 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 so that, blah, blah, blah. And the team goes, oh my God, you know, that's like 10 sprints worth of work. And the product owner goes, oh, okay, let's scope it down to maybe we'll just show one ad word based on the first word that the user types in rather than do the full-blown analysis, natural language processing to find out all the possible ad words that apply. And, okay, so we'll adjust the story. Now, generally, you readjust the words in the story so everybody's clear on what that limit is. I think the scope is often maybe a little redundant if you keep updating your stories. But if you people have just want to write that down, well, no, it's just this. The scope is this for this change. Then fine. Sorry, I'm criticizing the 4D analysis at the same time. Yes, you could write down the scope if that's useful for expressing what it is you're testing. I think the reason why I'm criticizing it a bit is I didn't start in the IT industry from the background of test. And I have this feeling that a lot of these tools in the 4D analysis, because I was saying my friend came from a background of test and he loved it, is it probably spoke more to him and his background than it does to my background. You know, maybe you or your test teams will really love some of these criteria, even though I say, well, I would just, you know, I would work that into the user story words rather than into the 4D analysis.
Here's one of the main points I think of the article that really struck with me. So I know from my experience, I've worked with groups that say that they're agile, but really it's more like running 2-week mini waterfall projects. And so the testers end up scrambling on the last day of the sprint to do all their tests and to complete all the required definition of done items. So I understandably, many testers, I think, start to hate Agile. So why do you think some testers start to hate Agile?
They're being asked to do similar things that they did with Waterfall, but to do it in a very short time. And they were used to the pace of Waterfall, and they were used to asking for a lot of inputs before they start their test plan, and at least getting the perception that there's a lot of well-planning analysis happening and that everything's well-documented. And it's all the lies we wrote down on the paper that made us feel secure. And, you know, it's nice to feel secure. Now, taking those lies we were writing on paper, the lies of, oh, we're going to do all these things in a year from now, and it's going to do all this and that. We take that away, and now we try to do it for a couple weeks. People are like, whoa, this just feels like, you know, like we don't have very good stability. We don't have very good control. And so they start freaking out. They think, oh, okay, before I can write the test plan, I need to get this from those people. And so at that point in some organizations, the test role becomes resistant to Agile because they want to, they're actually slowing down the process intentionally because the pace seems wrong to them. They're not bad people or anything. They're just the pace. When something sounds like it's going too fast, if you can find a dependency and say, hey, I need this before I can continue, now the spotlight moves to that dependency. And if people can't fulfill that dependency for you quickly enough, you have a reason not to be able to get what it is you need done in 2 weeks.
So there's also a line in here that I like. It says, to change the results of your work, you need to change yourself. I'm going to play some Zen music behind me when I say that. So, I think that's pretty much sums it up. I mean, people need to sometimes get out of their comfort zones, maybe. So that might be the reason why there's some resistance of saying it's not complete enough for them to continue or to do a proper job.
Yeah, because, you know, we'll do Agile, but all those guys should do Agile. Right. I'll keep doing what it is I'm used to and comfortable with. Unfortunately, Agile processes, they don't stay in silos very well. And that's a good thing. They pull in the developers and they pull in the testers and they get them to cooperate better. And not only that, it goes further. It pulls into the, you know, if you need to do a lot of fancy UI work, maybe you need a UX engineer on your team. And, oh, look, we need somebody to work on our requirements with us on a daily basis, to visit with the team and give us feedback and come to sprint planning and represent the product. Oh, now we need a product owner. So now we're building up the cast of characters. The team is now a cross-functional team, because if you're not cross-functional, you'll have a dependency somewhere. And if you can't fulfill that dependency quick enough, you now have a very inefficient process. So we have a cross-functional team of testers, developers, of a myriad number of different roles. And now they all need to adjust a little bit to each other, or maybe adjust a lot, in order to be successful.
Along this point, I've seen this actually be an issue, so I'm glad you brought it up. Is I've worked with Scrum teams. And they all, like, one team does the back end. That's the Scrum team. They're the back end Scrum team. You have the front end Scrum team. So it's almost like they're Scrum teams doing Agile, but they really are siloed, because they don't talk to one another. So it almost would make sense to take one person from each of those Scrum teams and make one team. So you have one that knows the front end, one that knows the back end, and everyone's sharing information back and forth. I would think that would be more agile.
Totally. Yeah, that's when people separate their teams by software components, they call those component teams. And I had a discussion with Craig at Scrum Gathering in Shanghai 2 years ago. And he says, you know what, Lance? If you have a component team, you're not doing Scrum. And I said, whoa, Craig, that's a very black and white statement. That means some of my clients, I've been helping them not do Scrum for quite a bit, and they were paying me to help them do Scrum. And he goes, well, the reason why is because we keep trying to help people kind of live with their situation, maybe too much. The component team is just so inefficient. We sure we can do Scrum, but it's just, there's always these impediments, and that's the dependencies between teams. So he said, you know, here's the litmus test. He says, if a component team finishes their sprint, can they demonstrate what they built at the end of the sprint? Can they do the sprint demo? Can you show working software? And, well, quite frankly, some of them can because of the dependencies. So something about how they made up their component team. Sometimes maybe it can work out. But Craig is right. There's plenty of groups I've been to where they do one, two, or three sprints, and then the fourth sprint's like an integration sprint where they bring the different component teams together and integrate the system, and now they have working software, and then they can finally do some integration testing, and then they can respond to the problems that they see, which is, you know, of course inefficient, because it took four sprints to do what a normal Scrum team can do in one. Component teams aren't a good thing, and many people would say you're not doing Scrum if you're doing component teams. Where am I at on that? I agree with Craig, but my client just says, you know what, I got to do component teams. Can you help me out here? I'll help them out as best I can. Many of those conversations will likely say, you know, if you didn't have component teams, this wouldn't be a problem. But anyhow, here's our impediments to the situation right now. And let's work on that.
Nice. Well, we need to get you back in to where I am to preach that component teams are not agile.
We had that discussion, you know. Probably can't go too far down this road, but we had that discussion a number of times.
Oh, yeah. It's been really hard to get the teams to communicate with one another.
There's an anti-recommendation I want to make, and it's so anti, I can't tell you the author, because if I tell you the author, maybe your listeners will go get the book by accident. Because sometimes we get these recommendations and we forget the anti-recommendation. But there is a book that tells you how to do component teams and builds a bunch of what we would, in quotes, I'm doing air quotes here, agile processes around doing component teams. And it's published by a guy from IBM. And I'm not going to say his name. But anyways, don't read that book.
Good. An anti-resource. The first on Test Talks. Awesome.
Okay.
So, Lance, we're almost running out of time. I have a few more things I want to touch on. You mentioned the Tuckerman model in your post, and I've actually never heard that before. So how can it help us write better agile test plans or do agile better?
So Tuckerman model is about four stages of teamwork development. And the first stage is storming, meaning, hey, Joe, you're working with Bob over here. And you're going, oh, hi, Bob. And then you hear from Bob that, yo, I know we're doing an Agile project, but man, I hate Agile. And you're thinking, oh, great. And then, oh, by the way, we're working with this other guy over here who has his own opinions. And so everybody, you bring all these cross-functional people together, or they're not cross-functional. They could be completely the same role, but regardless, you're going to have what's called storming because people are learning how to work with each other. And then the next step would be norming, where we're starting to actually be able to have productivity that's stable and performing, which means we're actually improving our product. We're not only have stable, but now we're starting to discover ways to improve. And there's a journeying, which isn't, most people don't even think about, which means, hey, the project's over. How do we close, get closure within the team before we move on? But most people don't even remember that. Storming, norming, performing are the three that most people have to face with. Those are the ones that we're most uncomfortable with. It's healthy to have storming. It's healthy to discover new ways to work together, because remember, we're going back to, you have to change yourself to change your development process. And people aren't comfortable with changing yourself because, hey, I think I'm a great guy. Why should I change? But and you are a great guy. But now we're in a different context. We have to figure out how to optimize. How long in the past did you spend writing your test plan?
Oh, months. Back in the day?
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Back in the day. Because there's people that are still back in the day, by the way. and those people, just like you and I was spending months too, maybe weeks to get a draft, yep. And then weeks of doing other stuff while getting reviewed of a draft to make new drafts. Yep. And so that's a process. And a lot of people are comfortable. Waterfall teams, by the way, could relax during this time. Like, hey, you know, we don't have any, like, you know, that release we just finished, well, that was crazy. And we worked really hard for a couple months, maybe longer, and we worked overtime. And now we're in the initial stage where we can relax. Yep. And we can work on documents, and management's not yelling at us about trying to make the date. So all of a sudden there's this relaxed time. It's kind of a happy time. So we had a Pavlovian experience where we're being rewarded for doing a lot of planning. And that trained us. And so now when we take people out of that context into Agile, it's like, okay, now you've got maybe a day you have 10% of your sprint velocity to prepare for the next sprint. And so if you have a 10-day sprint, you got one day. So you have one day to prepare for your sprint planning. It's like, whoa, what happened to that relaxation day? What relaxation months or two before I have to be, people are going to be like pushing on me to get, you know, to meet some schedule. Now in iterative development, we're doing it every bloody time. And now it's no longer so comfortable. We don't have that relaxation period. One of the Agile Manifesto principles. So there's the values, there's four values, and then there's like 12 principles. And the only people who probably memorize these things are people who do training like me. But anyways, so don't worry about it if you don't know these. It's good to know them, by the way. The Agile Manifesto principles and values are at agilemanifesto.org. Go look at them if you're doing Agile development. Print off the values, stick them on your cube wall, and those are your philosophical poles to test your judgment on whether you're going towards Agile or not Agile. And then after you're done with the four values, then you can tackle the principles, which there's 12 of, a lot of them. Anyways, one of the principles is sustainable development. You should be able to continue doing your job at a pace, sustainable pace. You should be able to do your work for the rest of your career. Maybe you want to think only a few years out. Okay, you should be able to do the type of work that you're doing today at the pace you're doing it. You should be able to sustain that for years. Okay, I know I have to get ready for the first sprint, but if I have to kill myself to get ready, that's not such a good thing. If I only have one day to do it, and I think I have 2 or 3 days worth of work, and I try to cram it in there, then that's not sustainable pace. There's flexibility. What I'm trying to say is, those of you on the podcast who are from waterfall teams and you had that comfortable time where you could relax a bit while you did the planning phase, is, you know what? In Agile, we just want to be, we don't want to be so relaxed as waterfall, but we don't want to be crazy like during the release time. So we try to find somewhere in the middle where we can be happy and we can have sustainable progress on our product and also be able to live sustainably as testers and developers.
Awesome. Sustainable happiness while you're doing development. Very nice.
Yeah.
So I know you gave us an anti-resource. So are there any must resources on how to help someone that's moving from waterfall development to an Agile development project?
One book I was recommending for the team I was working with, they were doing AATDD, Acceptance Test Driven Development. And I suggested to them a book to read on ATDD. ATDD by example is a pretty good book. Test plans in general at an abstract level, there isn't a lot of publishing around it because we're talking about agile test plan and it's hard to write, well, or maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's not a lot to say about it because it's simple. it's mostly unlearning to do. Any book by Lisa Crispin is quite good too. So she has a number of testing books out there. And she's been in the XP extreme programming community for a long time. So if she's been doing what she says and knows how to make that work on an XP team. So acceptance criteria are the simplest way to get your test plan expressed. But if you need more process and more, or if the people that are involved with the process really feel uncomfortable with something that lightweight, then add a little process. You can even invent your own. You were talking about how in your company you have something roughly about a 4-page test plan. That's not too bad. And you pass the number of litmus tests about whether you're doing agile or not. Feel free to bring in subject matter experts to your backlog grooming meetings or to your sprint planning meetings to help out the people who are saying, hey, we need more information about architecture. Okay, Scrum Master or team, go find the architect and invite them to your planning meetings on a regular basis until you feel like you don't need them anymore.
Okay, Lance, so before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to immediately improve their agile test plan efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
The people you are planning with, meet face-to-face. If you're planning with people, find a way to meet face-to-face. So if you need subject matter experts, or you need a product owner, or you need to talk to other testers or other developers, meet face-to-face. Find a way to do that.
So Lance, before we go, best place to contact you or find out more about you, your books that you write, all your awesomeness, that you the content you create.
Cool. My attempt at awesomeness. Twitter's good. Lancer Kind, Lance with an R on the end. Lancer Kind, KIND. I'm starting to use WeChat a lot more because it's hotter. It's more popular in China. So on WeChat, I'm Lancer Kind 1234. So those are the two best ones, WeChat or Twitter. My email, lancerkind@gmail.com. That's another one. Weibo, if you're from China, maybe use Weibo. It's not Lancer Kind over there. It's Kong Mei Guo, which is my Chinese name.
Okay, Lance, any last words or parting advice you want to give us?
I think it's important that the internet community be aware of the value that the community brings us, and also be sure to give back. A lot of the internet community is about sharing something or many things, be it information or software, for free. And I think it's important for people to keep that in mind and be present on what software, for example, for me, I just got agilenoir.biz up and running. I use some free software. A lot of people take donations. And I use some plugins that I would not have been able to do. Are you behavioral? This part of the website, without some work that some guy put up there for free. And he says, you know, just donate me enough money to buy a few beers. And so he's not to ask for big money. And I think all of us as a community, we should remember not to stiff the developers. Stop stiffing the developers. If you're using some software for free, please remember that you have this capability because somebody spent their free time to implement it. So yes, stop stiffing the developers or whatever you're using. Think about what are you using for free now? And maybe you intended to donate. This is like an NPR part of the show here. Maybe you intended to give, to donate back, but you haven't got around to it. So think about that. Think about today as what software you're using for free. And maybe you should hit the donate button on a few of those items. So that's the message I want to leave.
Awesome. Great message. Or click on someone's links or buy off their Amazon links. I would recommend that also.
There you go. Apps. There you go. Yes.
Awesome. Very good. Thanks again, Lance.
All right. Cheers.
Yep. Cheers. Thank you for joining me on Test Talks. And remember, you can find the links to everything of value that we talked about today in the show notes at www.testtalks/15. And as always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.